Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, September 24th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 7 in Bill's story, chapter 1, the fourth paragraph down. They did not need to tell me, and it ends with, but that was over now, and we'll be commenting, reading, and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Robin P. for the 12 Steps, for the 12 Traditions, Margaret N. The readers of the text are Julie E. B. and Leslie M. The share ID for yesterday, Wednesday, September 23rd, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 15,420, that's 15420. And for Thursday, September 24th, this morning, 7 a.m. meeting is 15,428, that's 15428. And our newcomer greeter is Kaylee R., and our announcements coordinator is Robin P. Thank you all for your service. The OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Robin P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Robin.
Morning, Mo. Thanks so much. This is Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida, soon to be in Tulum, Mexico. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted that we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Robin P. And I will now ask Margaret N. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Margaret N., compulsive overeater in recovery in California. 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for the opportunity to do service, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Margaret N. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers, is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted, and that is the star 1 button, not the mute button on your phone. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 7 of Bill's story, chapter 1. We are in we are going to read the fourth paragraph down. Starts with, "They did not need to tell me," and it ends with, "But that was over now." And I am going to ask Julie E.B. to get us started. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs. They did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. It was a devastating blow to my pride. I, who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining that endless procession of sots who had gone on before. I thought of my poor wife. There had been much happiness after all. What I would not give to make amends. But that was over. Now. Well, I'm so grateful to be able to share on this because I think before I learned how to identify in and just underline words and phrases that spoke to me, I would have thought this was a very sad paragraph indeed. They did not need to tell me. I knew, oh boy, I knew. But knowing wasn't enough. And thinking well of myself, having grandiose ideas that today would be the day, thinking I was, quote, ready or willing or honest or surrendered or abandoned, all of these things, all of those thoughts, all of my capacities were gone. And so here, under this phrase, cornered at last, I underlined that phrase, I wrote me, and I wrote step one. Step one, this is the beginning. This is the beginning of the turning of this story, and it's the beginning of the turning of my story. like the bottom of page 25 said, I'd come to the point there was no middle-of-the-road solution. I could continue on as best I could, and I was doing the best I could, blotting out my consciousness of my intolerable situation, my awakeness to it. Now, plunging into the dark, thinking of his wife, boy, that's kind of the first time there that he really is thinking of his wife. He is turning a corner, not just in a corner. Cornered at last, there had been much happiness after all. Now he could see the blessings. What I would not give to make amends, now a way out of the corner. That was over now, that knowing his capacity, his powerlessness. He was cornered in his powerlessness, so was I, and that is the best news. As I like to say, as I heard from some of you, powerless can be the best or worst news of my day-to-day. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Julie, for getting us started. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day, in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared in the last 2 days, then just wait until tomorrow. And I now open the lines up to take names of those who'd like to share.
Lois
Bruce
B.
E.
Okay, who was before Bruce? I heard you, Bruce.
Lois.
Gotcha.
P.
Thank you.
Lois. Oh, Lois, I got you. Okay, Lois P. Bruce
Arlene
E.
B.
Arlene
B.
B.
Ears and boys, yes.
Anyone else? I've got Lois P., Bruce E., Arlene B.
Colleen N.
Can
Colleen
you please tell
N.
me what page you were on?
We're on page 7, the bottom of the page. Starts with, they did not need to tell me, and we read that one paragraph only. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Not, we'll start with that lineup. Okay, I've got Lois P., Bruce E., Arlene B., and Colleen N. Lois, good morning, you're on.
Good morning, good morning. This is Lois P., recovered in New York. I'm actually thrilled to be reading this paragraph because it is so in line with my own life and my own recovery. This is a crucial moment for Bill. He has finally understood that his self-will and his efforts to succeed, all the achievements that he in his mind has accomplished, all of that strength that he has put into living a life and yet being crippled by this addiction at the same time, all of this is coming now to the forefront for him. He's finally surrendering. All of that pushing forward into the dark, it brings to mind the idea of, you know, we've seen these little tiny flowers that spring up in the concrete sometimes. That tiny little bud that suddenly bursts forth and blooms into the sunlight with stone and concrete all around it. To me, this was Bill's struggle. This was my struggle. He was pushing forward continuously in the dark, feeling he was going to overcome this one issue because he had been able to do that with so many other things in his life. And he's finally come to the point where he's exhausted. He has done everything he can through himself, his own effort to overcome this. And he's finally relaxing into that knowingness that he's defeated. And it's a beautiful moment, even though it's painful. It was as the same for me as well. It's excruciatingly painful when we finally come to be brokenhearted enough to realize that we cannot go on, that there is something else that has to happen for us. And I think he's about to bud. You know, it's that moment when he can finally, it's not yet, but where he can finally surrender. And at that moment, I think that's where he breaks into the light. That's where the spirit will enter him, and it's happening for him right now. And it's quite a beautiful paragraph, and I completely identify. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Lois P. Bruce E., followed by Arlene B. Good morning, Bruce.
Well, good morning. It's Bruce E. I'm glad to be here and able to share. Thank you for everybody doing service. Thank you for everybody on the line and this tremendous reading. I think, well, the doctor's opinion is tremendous, and this Bill's story is huge. And I think it's so big for me, and I guess so many others, and that we can all relate to this. I mean, we've all been there. You know, maybe it wasn't alcohol, maybe it was with the food. But we've been there, haven't we? And yeah, I've been there, you know, to where I was just at the end of the line and it was hopeless. You know, I just knew I couldn't do this thing myself, but I didn't know what I was supposed to do. You know, I didn't know what to do. And it says here, I knew and almost welcomed the idea. So they told him he was done for. And he said, oh, I recognize that, because I pretty much welcome that, because, man, it is the end of the line for me. And so he says here, it was a devastating blow to his pride. Well, he had had a huge amount of pride. Everything, he had been rolling on pride and ego for 10 years here. And that's all he had, all he had. And he'd used that all up. And now that's a blow to him that he can't do this thing himself. He just can't do it himself. I tried doing it myself so much, and it just never worked. And I had to have a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining the endless procession of sots. And that's a habitual drunkard. You know, in other words, there had been one guy after the other man or woman, you know, whatever, gone all before him and didn't make it. And now he's going to just join that group and go on and die. And he thinks of his poor wife, you know, because she stuck with him all this time. She never threw him out. She never left him. She stuck with him the whole time. He thinks of his poor wife. And there had been happiness, you know. They'd gone on that motorcycle trip. They had done different things, and you know, there had been some happiness. Gone to the country and back and forth. They always thought, well, this will work. And so there had been happiness, and he'd give anything to make amends. Well, see, his amends, I think the way I see it, his amends had run out. You know, oh, honey, I'm sorry, I won't do it tomorrow. And there he is drunk again. I'm sorry, honey, I won't do that again. You know, I won't, I'll get a job now, and I won't do this. So no more amends. That was over now. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. So what's left if you have made all the amends you can make, and amends aren't going to work anymore? Well, now it's living amends, right? So I was doing the steps, and I wanted to do an amends with my wife about something or whatever. And I came to that place, and my sponsor said, now it's living amends. So I thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Bruce E. Arlene B., followed by Colleen N. Arlene, good morning. Press star 1, Arlene, to unmute yourself. Can't hear you.
Okay, good. Good morning, everyone. Arlene B. from South Florida. What I hear in this paragraph is the beginning of the smashing of his ego. And I certainly had that kind of ego in the disease, and not where I felt so great about myself, but that constant focus of either being the best or the worst, striving to be the best, and then the self-pity, which was still part of ego. And that's what I hear also, Bill's self-pity. And now he was to be part of, you know, the losing, all of the losers, and it was too late for him. And I hear everything, and yet he didn't have the needed power. He still didn't have the needed power to pull himself out of that. That power didn't come until much later, but at least he was suddenly vulnerable. And that's what I became. You know, I lived my life on the basis of shame and self-pity. And I tried to cover it up with grandiosity and false self-confidence. And it never worked, because inside I felt hollow. just the way Bill felt, and that's why he kept trying to fill that emptiness with accomplishments and liquor and accolades and whatever he could do. And I so identify with his life. So, you know, I had to get to that point too, where I was, you know, finally in such despair that, you know, I would follow suggestions. And that's the big thing, becoming willing. And Bill is on his way to be willing, although he still has another debacle left. You know, he's getting there and he's getting open-minded. So that's what we all want, that open-mindedness and willingness. And thank you for letting me share with that. I'll pass.
Thank you, Arlene B. Before I take Colleen in, let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in Bill's story on page 7, the fourth paragraph down on the page. It's the last paragraph. They did not need to tell me, and it ends with, but that was over now. And after Colleen, I will take more names. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Colleen N., compulsive overeater, 141 days. In a Vision for You program. Yay, fellows. Wow, I really relate to this because I felt like I always had the right ideas. I always knew what the next diet was going to be, the next diet pill or weight loss program or supplement or whatever. And I would seek out those doctors or those healthcare professionals that were doing the next best, greatest way that I was going to, you know, solve my weight loss problem on the outside. And I went to a doctor and I was being nosy when he walked out of the room, and I peeked at my chart and it said morbidly obese. And I just wanted to die right there. I knew I was overweight. I would refer to myself as the fat girl, or you know, I would do that if I could get off my fat ass, or I can't go there because I can't fit my fat ass in there. And then when I saw morbidly obese, I was done. I just thanked him and left. I had to, like, let that soak for a few days because that was the end. Like, you're going to have all these problems because you're obese. And it just hit me so hard. And I realized the issue really wasn't what I look like on the outside. That was a symptom of something that was going on the inside, in my heart, my spirit, and in my mind. And all of a sudden, this overwhelming selfishness came over me of how many times I lied to get out of something, or I had a migraine because I didn't want to go to the beach with the kids in a bathing suit. God forbid, you know, I didn't own a bathing suit for so many years. Shorts. We went, my daughter turned 21 last week, and we went to the beach, and she said, I'm 21 years old. This is the first time I've seen my mother wear shorts. And I thought, again, how much shame I had. Like, this kid, we live in Florida. She's 21. She's never seen me in shorts. What the hell is wrong with me? And I kind of, you know, it all came rushing back, this overwhelming guilt and shame and all those feelings, and I had to, like, hurry up and go say some prayers to myself and remind myself that, you know what, I'm work in progress. I'm in the right place. It's not about losing the weight on the outside. It's, for me this time, it's losing whatever's going on the inside, all the heaviness on the inside, on my heart, on my spirit, and in my mind. That's what the goal is for me. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day, and I pass.
And thank you so much, Colleen N. So although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. And we're on page 7, the fourth paragraph. They did not need to tell me. And who would like to share?
Larry G.
Jody E.
I got Larry G, and was that Jody E?
Yes.
Hi, Jody.
Wendy M.
Wendy M.
Laureen W.
Laureen W. Got any other takers out there? We'll go with that group. We got Larry G, Jody E, Wendy M, and Laureen W. Okay, Larry. Good morning. You're
good morning.
On.
Good morning. Thank you for service. This is Larry G from Northern California. Oh, my God. I love this format of studying one paragraph at a time. I don't know how many people we've got on this call today, but you know what I love about it is we read one paragraph, and everybody has their own interpretation of it. Here's the way I see it. Bill's not done. He's not done. He wants to be done, but he's not. We have like 5, 6, 7, 8 more paragraphs. He's 12-step. And then what they call in sales, Ebby does the closing, asks the question, why don't you choose your own conception of God? That's when he finally breaks through his armor, and he's done. On May 17th, I had just come off a prodigious binge, and I'm talking hopefully to the new person out there. I came off this prodigious binge on Saturday. I added up about 40,000 calories, 44 ounces of cake, an entire tub of macaroni and cheese, a gallon of ice cream, and a box of ice cream sandwiches. I was so sick. I had food poisoning the next day. And I had that frothy emotional appeal they talk about in the doctor's opinion. And I, that evening, I broke my abstinence one more time and had 3 dinners. I wasn't done. I called this person out of the blue. She's now my sponsor from Visions. And she suggested, why don't you get on this call, the Sunday call? And this is what I said to myself. Not another effing meeting. Just give me the secret sauce. Just give me the magic pill. I wasn't done. And I woke up the next morning, and I had that number in front of me, and I was sick and dying drunk from another prodigious binge. I picked the phone up. I got in Visions, and you guys 12-stepped me. It was like Ebby sitting in front of me. And I could say to you today, I'm done. I am done with this. Today, I'm recovered. Just for today. But boy, all I had to do is one small little compulsive food behavior. I'm not vigilant about thinking I've got this, and I'm back in the food again. Thank you, God, for Visions. Thank you, God, for this woman who 12-stepped me on May 17th. And thank you all for who are listening. I pass.
Well, thank you, Larry G. Jody E., followed by Wendy M. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Mo and everyone. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in Monterey, California, with blue skies. So, yes, this reminds me of when I first got to OA. Just before I came to my first meeting, I was at a very low point, contemplating possibly committing suicide one day. Not that day. And I was done, almost done, and yet not with the food. But I was done with trying to manage my life myself. I knew I needed something desperately. And I found Overeaters Anonymous. But I was still a long way from getting abstinent and from making good to the people whose lives I was affecting like a tornado roaring through their lives. Would that I could make amends. That's how I feel now. This is what this paragraph reminds me of also, is there were some amends some wrongs that I could not set right. And my marriage did not survive them. But I can still live an amends to my ex-husband, setting him free, wishing him well, praying for him, supporting him in his new relationship, and as the father of our daughter, to the best of my ability. So I do what I can to make amends. I live these amends one day at a time to the best of my ability, and that's the best I can do. And I do not need to regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it, because I have recovered. And I can live in today and know that the best I can do is to be the very best person I can be today, doing God's will as I perceive it, one day at a time. And with that, I pass. Thank you all for your shares and for being here.
Thank you, Jody E., Wendy M., followed by Laureen W. Good morning, Wendy. Press star 1 to unmute. Wendy, can't hear you.
All right. Well, that was my share. Wendy M., Boulder, Colorado. I was just saying I'm so glad to be back with my fellows. So good. And I think it's 7 days entirely abstinent. Fabulous. So, you know, Bill, I'm on to you because I'm on to me. So they did not need to tell me. I mean, I'm sorry if I say that. That's just passive aggressive, right? I knew and almost welcomed the idea. Whoa, that's a big statement right there. That's something I would say. Like what that reminds me of is me going to you guys and saying, well, do you think I should give this up? Like, it's like coming to you and knowing already what God would prefer that I do, you know, and so he's welcoming the idea because he, in my opinion, I feel like he already knows what the right idea is, you know. It's just, it's very up and down, like this paragraph. It was a devastating blow. I mean, you know what, Bill? Me too. I am into grandiosity. I am into drama. I'm actually a performer by trade, you know. It was a devastating blow, but he welcomed the idea, you know. It's just, you know, he thought so well of himself. Me too, of course. My abilities, my capacity to surmount obstacles. So what I was doing in OA for 20 years, what I realized, and thank you, God, I had the realization, is that, you know, I look fine. I look good. So I think I'll just use OA as a diet plan. And not only that, but in 2015, I got entirely abstinent with the Vision for You. And I was like, entirely abstinent? This is going to be an even better diet plan. Like, I am going to really lose the weight and basically white-knuckle it and hang out with you guys as my friends. I did not get the God thing for 20 years. And I love that I did not get the God thing. And I love that I got it now. I got it now. And somebody said, you know, the God thing is not like something in my mind that I can understand. You know, mechanically, it has to land in my body. It has to land in my heart. The other day, somebody said on the line, I know God loves me. And I was like, what? She said, I know God loves me. And I was like, oh, my God, that landed throughout my body. That was not a mechanical thought. That was a, oh, my gosh, that means that everything will be well no matter what. And again, it wasn't a diet plan. It was a, oh, gosh. There is a higher power, and I'm experiencing that higher power now. It was such a profound thing to hear. And, you know, I just appreciated it.
Time.
You know, and again, is that time?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm going to stop there. Thanks for letting me share it.
Well, thank you, Wendy M. And before we take Laureen W., we have time for more shares. I will remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 7. The fourth paragraph down, they did not need to tell me, and it ends on the next page, page 8, but that was over now. And I'll take Laureen W., and then we'll take some more shares after that. Good morning, Laureen.
Good morning, Mo, and thank you, Team Thursday. This is Laureen W. from the South Shore area of Massachusetts. And I just want to thank you. In reading this, I really needed to hear this paragraph today. And it reminded me back in 1992 when I came in and I said to my husband, I am so tired, sick and tired of this yo-yo that I've been doing all my life. I would diet, lose weight, and then gain more back. I did it so many times, and not just a few pounds. It was 50 pounds, 75 pounds, even over 100 pounds. And I had done that all my life until I hit 45. And my Ebby came to me and said, you know what? We can go back. We can go back to OA. And I hit, because I say back, because I tried in 1980, and I couldn't get it, and I found out I was pregnant with my third child, and I said, good, and I'm out of here. And when I was at 1980, I weighed 260 pounds. I needed to gain more to realize how desperate I needed to be. So in 1992, I weighed 300 pounds. So I gained that much weight in that time dieting. And believe me, I ached all over. My bones ached, my knees, my joints, and I would walk stairs and be short of breath. And as a nurse and a visiting nurse, I would go to people's homes and have to rest a minute before I rang the bell so that they wouldn't think I was in distress. The disease had me by my throat, and only OA itself could bring me. But like Bill, we knew after reading this paragraph that there was another relapse. And I've had a couple of relapses in this program where I was so judgmental about other people. I thought, you don't gain weight on abstinent food. And yes, you can gain weight on abstinent food if you don't weigh and measure. If you just keep eating, of course you'll gain weight. So I had a lot of lessons still to learn, and I'm still learning. Thank you, God, and thank you for this program. And I feel as though my best survivor has been our teaching lesson is the Big Book. My Big Book step sponsor, who brought me to Visions and brought me through the step study, was God sent. I know that today. And I need to keep relying on God for my health and my sanity, because that's where it comes from. I know everybody has a God in their life, and they just have to reach out and ask God his will, and his will be done. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Laureen W. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I can take names of those who'd like to share on this paragraph. We're on page 7. The fourth paragraph down, they did not need to tell me, and it ends with, but that was over now. So who would like to, we kept time for about 3-4 more shares.
Okay.
Who was that?
George.
That's George.
Yes.
George E. Who else?
This is Jeff T. I would like to share.
Jeff T?
Yes. T.
Okay, got
Tom,
you.
Yes.
Okay, got you, Jeff. One more?
Jordan L.
Jenna? L.
Jenna G?
Jenna. How do you spell that, Jenna?
G-E-N-N-A.
N-N-A. And you say Jenna E, did you?
Jenna G.
G. Okay, and Jordan L. All right, we'll stop there. I'll see if we can get you in, Jenna.
Okay.
George E, Jeff T, Jordan L, and Jenna E, if we have time. George, you're up.
Okay, I hope you can hear me. George E, recovering compulsive reader. I'm really struck by this paragraph today and some of the shares. It seems to me,
George, could you get closer to your phone? It's very soft. That's better.
Is any better?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, technical difficulties. All right, so this paragraph, I was struck by the but. I always look for that conjunction, I guess. And, you know, it seems like that was the ultimate self-pity. And I remember being in that state back in 2012. And I had to live in that state. It was actually Tennessee at the time. For about 6 months. And not wallowing, but what's a good word? Morass. I had to live in morass. And, you know, so you're at this period, at least I was, at this bottom where I didn't really want to go on, but I didn't really want to recover either. And that's what I'm hearing in this paragraph. And I like what was shared about, we got about six more paragraphs to go. Because, you know, it takes what it takes, and it takes as many meetings as it takes, and it takes as many, you know, I mean, I deserve my share in this program. I really do. I've been suffering with this disease from a very young age, and it led to other diseases. And but it wasn't just the spirit. It was the spiritual. And so what he's expressing in his paragraphs is this great amount of guilt for all the damage he's caused. And, yeah, I'd like to make amends. Well, what's clear at this point in time is he didn't really understand what an amends was yet. And I think everybody goes through that in recovery, you know, that before they get to recovery, you know. All right. I just wanted to, you know, speak up because I didn't hear a lot of other shares. So thank you. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you. Thank you, George. Jeff T. followed by Jordan L. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, this is Jeff T. in Oregon, and I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. I heard somebody else refer to step one, and I certainly hear step one in this, the powerlessness, the admission that his life is unmanageable, and he's basically made a mess of everything, and he has absolutely no hope, you know, hopelessness and powerlessness. And I was thinking how, you know, if all I did was work step one, that's where I would stay forever. I would stay in that hopelessness. It's not until step two when we gain a sense of hope, and it's not until step three when, you know, we regain some faith, and step four and five, we learn some honesty and humility. And all those things that we gain throughout the steps are what helps me to actually have sanity and recovery. And I don't know why it takes so long to go from step one to step two. I think it took Bill a long time. I know it took me a long time. Someone said it takes what it takes. I'm just grateful that I became willing to continue on past that hopelessness, because it's such a state of despair, and you see no end in sight, no light at the end of the tunnel, and everyone that's in here has felt that, and I think that's really what draws us all together, is we honestly look at that and we sit with it, and we acknowledge, yeah, I can't do anything, I am powerless, and it's a very powerful thing, but on its own, it's not enough. So I'm really grateful for the program. I'm grateful for this meeting and this format. It's really interesting. So thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you, Jeff T. Jordan L., followed by Jenna G. Good morning, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, Mo. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Gunnison, Colorado this morning, and grateful to be absent and on the line with you guys. I welcomed the idea. It's a devastating blow to my pride. I was like, though, I thought a lot of my abilities. I still think a lot of my abilities, you know, like, let's be real here. I still think I'm a pretty smart cookie. I still think on my best days that I have something to contribute to this world of ours, you know? And I'd like to think now that it's a little less selfish and a little more centered around something besides just me, you know? but I do got to say, I feel like we're not giving Bill enough credit here. yes, Bill drinks after this again. Bill's an alcoholic. That's what alcoholics do. They drink. At this point in time, there was no program. There was no step two. There was nothing. It was just Bill and Lois on their own, with the kind doctor, of course, but there was nothing to do after this. There was nowhere to go. There was this is what happened to alcoholics. They went insane. That was it. That was absolutely it. but it's good. It's good that Bill's getting to the end of his rope here. He's seen that there's no human power that's going to be able to lift him out of this. And it's what makes him willing to listen to Ebby in the coming pages here, you know? I got to say, too, we're much well off than Bill was. There was nothing for him at this point. He was to come to develop it, and I think truly inspired by a higher power, a God of his own understanding, you know. but we're a lot well off than Bill. There's not only a program and 12 steps and people that have gone before us, but there's a lot of people that have gone before us. We have a whole heap of evidence that this works when you are willing to take these steps with complete abandon. So anyway, grateful to be on the line this morning. That's all I got.
Okay, Jordan. Well, Jenna, we have time for you. So you're up. Good morning, Jenna. Press star 1 to unmute. Can't hear you, Jenna.
Okay, this is Jenna. Sorry, it
there
took me
are.
A little while to get here. Yeah, here I am. Good morning, everybody. What strikes me about the reading, of course, is that opening statement, you know, they didn't have to tell me, I knew. Well, yeah, I know. I, just like everyone else here, I know a lot. So what I'm thinking where I'm at right now is I know I have an eating disorder, a disease, whatever you prefer to call it. And I know that I need help with living with it and dealing with it. But what I believe is crucial to not letting my weight, you know, let me just go back 2 seconds. My past is basically restrictive. I wouldn't say anorexic, but very restrictive in what I ate. And I was very thin for most of my life. I've now in the last 2 years gone to the overeating side of things. And I'm at the point where I know that if I don't moderate my thinking, that's where I'm going to get in real trouble. And this might get to a point where I am morbidly obese. I don't need anyone to tell me, I know. So what that means for me today is living with an abstinence that is not perfect, having guidelines around it and boundaries, but not saying to myself, oh, okay, you have this disease, you have this disorder, therefore, if you eat a specific food, that means that you can just keep eating. Or if your abstinence isn't perfect one day and you're actually hungry, that means that you can just abandon yourself to your perceived or actual hunger. It's more like, okay, this is what's happened today. This is what my food looks like today at this moment. And in order to succeed at this program, you must moderate your thinking about your food and go on with the rest of the day to the best of your ability. And for now, maybe that's your abstinence. So, yeah, I believe a lot in the psychology of this program. The higher power for me is connecting and talking with other compulsive eaters and people who have eating disorders, staying connected and sharing and listening to the best of my ability. So that's all I have for today. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Jenna G. That will end this portion of the meeting. And I want to thank everyone who gave service at this meeting and all those who are on the line and all those who shared this morning. Thank you very much. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Leslie M. to read a vision for you.
Thank you for your service, Mo. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.